And now it gives me enormous pleasure to welcome back a great friend of mine, and well, now Roman's. Bruce has spoken for us before. Bruce has hot-footed it from the other place, dare I say. He's taken a day out of Balliol to come and talk to us. There he looks after a lot of lovely young people, just like our young people here. And he wears various hats, one of which is described as well-being and welfare. I long to have some well-being and welfare in my house. I hope you can tell me how to achieve it. Over to you, Bruce.
Lovely. Well, it's very good to be here, and I'm delighted to be back, because last time I was here, I was talking about bringing up adolescent children, and that was the topic. And I was slightly amused and mischievous on that occasion, because, in fact, the audience was all from Newnham, and none of the men were there at all. So I mused about bringing up children. It seems to still be a woman's role, and perceived to be that. So I asked where the men were. So you landed up suggesting we do something on fatherhood. So it's great to see some guys here as well this time, as if fatherhood might include some men in the conversation. But also what intrigued me was I've never been invited to speak to a male college or a traditionally male college about bringing up adolescent children or about the role of fathers. So actually I'm deeply impressed that Newnham is actually forging ahead in a really interesting conversation, which I actually think to be, it's fascinating, the other colleges just haven't caught on to this. So generally, many of us are really pleased that Newnham's doing this. I think it's great that it is. I hope it doesn't reinforce traditional roles, but actually should encourage some of our other colleges to really wake up to what has been happening over the last few years. But since this topic has been on my mind, of course, you land up looking at press stories and thinking about what it might be to be a father. And I was very pleased over the last few months. There was a wonderful thing about the England rugby player, Danny Kerr, who fatherhood has transformed me as a person. And that was just in the Evening Standard, picked up in London. Fantastic image, a picture of a rugby player with his child. And I think that's a really interesting kind of thing, because the David Beckham ones become very commonplace. And it's really rather good to have other ones, but it still feels as if we're breaking a mould. And I think this mould seems to be taking a long time to break. There's another thing, of course, the Telegraph would love this. Call the male midwife. He looks like a butcher, but Mark Harris has delivered 500 babies. And he's one of the 61 registered midwives. And why a butcher? Anyway, there we go. Particular kind of way of doing it. But I think it does suggest that we're beginning to get somewhere. Now, it's a well-known jibe that Freudian therapists have clients who bring Freudian dreams, and Jungian therapists have clients who bring Jungian dreams. And having this topic of fatherhood on my mind seems to have been that in my therapy work, I seem to have had clients talking about fathers for the last 2 years, as if they've caught up what's been on my particular mind. And working as a man in a caring profession, as a therapist, and many of you know I am a priest as well, has meant that people, because you're a man, they either seek you out or they're trying to avoid you. I don't think gender is neutral in the caring professions at all. We might want to think about, however much we've thought about gender over the years, it's not something which we've thought about very clearly or we've got very far with. And it's something I think often women who've come to see me also are wanting to negotiate some of those questions about gender and talking to men. What's it mean to talk to a man? And again, when trying to think about this, I've thought about the people who I know who have already broken some of the role around parenting. Of course, being a therapist, I will now talk about my own mother. But my father died just as I was starting my teenage years. And my mother, as a single parent, had to bring up me and my brothers. She did always recall a line her husband, my father, had said, which was, however these boys turn out, it will be your fault. And at various moments, this was a kind of resonating sort of saying during my childhood. But I think when we're wanting to think about fathers and parenting, I think we could learn a lot from single parents and how those questions are out there. And I think there's been some really fantastic stuff on that. I'm also thinking about some of my lesbian friends who brought up children. And I think they've also kind of then, yet again, questioned some of the stereotypical mould, as indeed some of the gay men who are now bringing up children as well. So I think we've got a lot of very interesting conversation we could have about how gendered roles are, how gendered we still see, what do we even mean by fatherhood or by motherhood? And I think we're stuck with some really crazy, dated language around some of that, and I'm hoping we can pull some of those ideas about, because I think often in my role and my task with it, I fulfill what might be traditionally called quite a maternal role. And I find even with students, I land up, and I hate this kind of idea, but actually it's really interesting now. We do baking within college and we think this is a good activity. I bake for the children. And I kind of thinking, I know this isn't a maternal, you know, I know it won't, you know, men can bake. But there's something as well that actually by breaking some of those traditional kind of things, that actually this is the stuff the blokes do as well, we're kind of beginning to change all of that. And I think some of that debate in our media has helped us just stretch our thinking beyond male, female, what a man does, what a woman does, what a father does, what a mother does. And I think some of us guys are particularly enjoying playing with that and breaking out of the mould. I think the tragic thing is the feminist agenda, which so helped women, there's still not the equivalent of this for men in any way that has really taken root in any successful way. I have been in the woods, I have done drumming as a kind of thing, I've done a sweat lodge, and I've done lots of getting in touch with my inner, whatever it was I was getting in touch with. And I think the men's movement has yet to really challenge at a deep level throughout all levels of society, in the same way that that movement for change for women has been so inspirational. And I think that's something, again, I'd like us to see and think about a bit. One of the things I did want to just say is that a lot of what we've been thinking about so far is in quite privileged settings about parenting. And for many people, that actually isn't the case. I think one of the problems is it often now takes two incomes to achieve what one income used to achieve. And that's created a huge pressure on families. But I'm often speaking with young people who have found that their parents have thrown money at them, and actually what they've wanted was love and time. And that's actually perhaps even more costly than many families actually have around. So I think there is a real question we need to look at of people who can't afford childcare or au pairs or privilege in that normal way that many of us would like to. And some people who are having to rely on grandparents to fulfill the role, and many grandparents who don't want to fulfill the role. You know, and actually thinking, this is not what I had signed up for. So the assumption that the village can bring up the child, actually, that's a really odd translation to my friends who work in Africa, because it's about the broader extended family, actually. It's not particularly the village bringing up a child. But actually, we don't have that. And actually, we've got grandparents who are wanting to be free doing other things, or may also having to be carry on earning themselves, because actually, the cost of things, they don't have the wealth behind them. Okay. As I said, I think I've been lucky that my own mother started negotiating these for us in the 70s. And of course, being a therapist, I don't want to either idolise or denigrate my mother within this. Actually, I want to do something which is neither of those. But actually, it's something that I think myself and my brothers, because we had a really competent mother who managed to get on with things and get us through, we've all had very different relationships because of that. And I think for more and more people who've had that. And it's interesting now to see with our children and the nieces and nephews, they all seem to be far more liberated because of what happened in one part of family history has kind of fed and nurtured a different understanding about the place and role of women. And it's rather interesting. In some families, they seem to have been able to do that, and other families are very keenly reinforcing rather traditional roles. Recently, a young man came to see me in my private practice as a therapist, and he was just about to become a father. His own father had been very violent, very angry, and had been a drinker as well, and had eventually taken his own life. Now, my recently married man was very anxious about becoming a father, and actually palpably frightened. Because he didn't want to become his father. And in other aspects of his life, he could see, and people would say to him, "Oh, you're just like your dad. Oh, it's so," and it was kind of like alarm bells ringing for him. What I thought was terrific was this young man came to see a therapist on the journey to becoming a dad, and I thought that was a great thing. So I kind of felt a lot more confident about how he was going to be as a dad. And of course, what he struggled with, which most men struggle with but really find hard to articulate, is that when his wife did give birth, he couldn't cope with the overwhelming feelings of love that he had. And that made it really complicated for him to understand his own father, because his father had been very violent towards him, and his overwhelming love for his child made his bereavement even more difficult to comprehend, to live with. Actually, I think he's going to be a brilliant dad, and I've enjoyed working with him. But I think it's great now that men are questioning the role models and saying, what else might we do? Another knew that his father had left as soon as he was born. And again, he was terribly frightened because, again, this overwhelming feeling at the birth of his daughter, he was genuinely frightened at the level of emotion it triggered within him. And actually how he allowed himself to stay in the space and stay talking about the emotion. Men aren't always so good at talking about emotions. There was a great campaign we ran a few years ago in the north of England, which was, it was a nice little poster. It was, women go to the toilet to talk. Men just go to the toilet. And we often suggest in men group, what would it be like if you said, I'm going to the loo, and you say, oh, I'll come with you. No guys would ever do that. And it would be just amazing if they did. The world would be very different. But of course, it's the thing men find almost incomprehensible, that when a woman says, I'm going to the loo, another woman will just say, I'm going with you. Quite recently, a young woman came to see me. Her father had had several affairs during the marriage, and she had known about this when she was around 10. She first got to have knowledge of this. And finally, he left. He left the home when she was 13. And the mother was devastated. The mother had, in fact, known about the affairs, but still wanted him as a husband, wanted him to stay. And in her culture, there was a huge shame around divorce and separation. And of course, this person coming to see me didn't trust men, didn't want to be like her mother, who put up with that kind of man, but was trying to negotiate how her relationships can be, because her relationships on the whole were troubled. She oscillated, as most of us do, between the need we have and the problem with that, the way we reject closeness. We want closeness, but we also struggle with the intimacy of closeness. I always say we all feel this, and then I get blank faces and kind of think, oh, it's just me and the client who feels this. No, but I think many of us struggle with our desire to be close to somebody and what that closeness impacts, how it impinges upon us. And of course, what it meant was that she when it came to a match, she was almost kind of questioning him, what kind of chap he was. Was he going to be like her father? What was this? Was he going to be this kind of... And she was, of course, this guy on a first date was kind of just feeling slightly throttled by somebody trying to hold on so and to question. But the damage of the father was really quite powerful for her and what it was going to mean in her life. And I think most of us need to have or to work at we either have a secure base or we work at creating one. And I think for a lot of us, particularly the people I see as a therapist, is people work at building their secure base. And of course, for many people, it's one of the things education actually can really liberate and give people is a secure base they wouldn't have otherwise. And that's the importance of education and access to education across our society, which I think increasingly we're struggling to give. There is a stack of literature in the world of therapy and psychoanalytic ideas about mothers. There's remarkably little about fathers. There is some, but there is remarkably little, but it is sparse. And one of the things I'm really pleased to be here with Joanna, is that actually I think literature has often given us an extra language when we don't have the experience ourselves. And I think Joanna Trollope's been actually outstanding on this. I was going to get her to sign the book. Anyway. But Susan Hill is another writer who's really, really good at looking at relationships and ideas. I really think we need to encourage. But if you look at any of the research, who reads these books? I'm afraid our reading patterns are also very gendered here. It's women who tend to read these books and novels, not men. So again, men often don't have the same language here. I have one client who comes to see me who had a very disruptive, very disorganized, chaotic and abusive childhood. And she watches television to discover what normal life is like. And I asked what programs she, and I hadn't watched these, so I didn't watch these programs, but it was the Jeremy Kyle show, which I don't know if many of you have come across. But for her, and this is what we have to think about, how many people's baselines are when we're working with understanding people. I mean, it's not a program many people here necessarily will watch on a regular basis or admit to watching, but you laughed, so you must know what it is. But EastEnders, many of the Hollyoaks, many of these things, the role of men is fascinating within these kind of programs and often not very good. And if you don't have a good sense of what it, and her question often in therapy is, what is normal? Is this normal? Is this normal that I'm feeling this? And you might want to say, It's a frequent feeling, but what might be a good feeling? What might be more creative, more liberating, more freeing for you? And I think we're struggling with good language for people, again, over what being a father is, over what being a mother is, over what being a parent might be, or a carer. You do discover, if you look for the literature, there are a lot of joke books for men about becoming a dad. And lots of jokes and teasing kind of, and somewhat, volume 8, I think it is, of Sigmund Freud's 24 volumes is on humour and the role of humour in the unconscious. And it's a kind of set of very unfunny Jewish jokes. It's kind of a particularly odd volume of Freud's. But there is something about the humour here which is very demeaning for men. It's very destructive of men. Now, again, women have negotiated a lot of that over the last 100 years or so of how to negotiate literature, how to negotiate roles and all the rest of it. Men, there's a lovely new Lady Bird book. I don't know if you've seen the new spoof Lady Bird books. They are magnificent. And there's one called How It Works, The Husband. And there's a picture, one of those Lady Bird bright pictures of a man there. And he said, this man looks quite complicated. He isn't really. He's a husband. He works on sausages and beer. Now, in many ways, it's brilliant and it's funny, and I love the Lady Bird books, but there is this kind of endless joking around men on what their roles is and what being a dad is, and I think sometimes, because we've not got the capacity to talk about it, because we're not going to the loo in pairs to discuss it, we land up actually feeling the wound of that in a way that's difficult. That it's very interesting. I used to run a group for men in prison, and them discussing what it means to be a man, to have a role when they feel continually got at, they don't have a straightforward place at the table. We might want to return to that. I did just go into Waterstones to buy a greetings card for somebody, and there was this card right in front of me. I thought, this is great for today. It said, "That's for when Mum says no." And I thought it was very, very interesting, because that actually raises the whole question of parents and how parents negotiate that kind of territory. But I was pleased to see that somebody I've known over the years and stuff, this, I don't know if a version of this will come to England, but he sent me a copy to thank me, which is really nice, called The Dude's Guide. It's typical of bloke, has to be The Dude's Guide to Babies. Now, actually, it is really good, because it's been written by a biological dad as well as a dad who adopted. So lots of kind of questions around that just taken. It says, with half the panic and twice the fun. And what they've tried to do is to get a popular book out there, even including questions around weight loss and your baby. You know, things that people, or why does that bit of the umbilical cord fall off? You know, all the kind of questions men feel really embarrassed because they should do, but get worried about asking about. And this is a really practical book. I do hope it gets published over here. But I think there are attempts to do, but there was something about it having to be a dude's book. It had to be a cool book, which made me worry about the whole question of masculinity in the 21st century and how far we've really come with all of that. Also, if you look at some of the evolutionary biology stuff, and you look at some great work on fathers in nature, it's usually the kind of just, we're basically just a sperm bank in different ways, and we sort of shag and go, and we actually don't need to be taken into the relationship at all. And actually, if you look at some of that kind of reductionist writing, it really has questioned for many men their place or their role in the whole of this process, and I think that's not always helped the debate tremendously, nor our understanding of human sexuality and relationships. And I think that's had quite a large knock-on effect of what it is within a couple, or in any couple, to be equal, but not to be the same. To have differences, but to have equality. And I think many relationships, or in fact most relationships, have to work out what equality means. And I think that's again where we can look actually at the role modelling of lesbians in a very powerful way within that, which I think has been terribly helpful. But some of the young guys I've worked with really struggle at what it is to be a man. Father as a role model is not always good. You look at literature, and there's some interesting anthologies, you know, from Dickens onwards, of people kind of having male characters within there. And I know Larkin reminds us what a huge effect our parents have on us, to paraphrase. But it is the problem of how the next generation finds a way of moving forward. And it's often, I think I would say with many guys, it's the problem of managing anger as well as envy, which becomes a real question. That combination in the home, either towards their partners or towards their children. I think anger and envy are big things we might want to turn to. The number of men who struggle hugely, can say this in therapy, struggle to say it to their wives, how difficult it is when they find their wives breastfeeding. Because I don't want to present men as Neanderthal, and some of us have moved a bit, but there's often this sense that my wife is mine, her body is we are together, and there's this thing which has come between us, which we love, but it's also coming between us. And I think a broader conversation of the effect of, and often men feeling that they can't breastfeed. I mean, I love that, not being able to bottle feed, because actually it's quite frightening if you're not able to feed and nurture. And I think I've heard that observation so often in different ways. Envy is a very powerful emotion. We might want to turn to that. Occasionally I do, and I've done with guys in different kind of settings, a kind of alphabet exercise, you know. What's the A when you think of father? And it's nearly always angry. What's B? He's a blighter, he's a bugger, he's belligerent. C is catastrophe. It's never a nice alphabet. So we're always trying to go to the adorable, brilliant, caring, daring, exciting. We never get there. We really get furious. And it's very interesting, almost like a word association if you do it. We don't have to get that far down the alphabet, because it's really good, because you would get stuck on some letters. But actually, to get the words people think about when they think about father is often quite a disturbing kind of thing, the first words which come to mind, because we're still stuck in a quite a dated model there. I think one of the things, as we know with babies, they carry a huge amount of our hopes and our fears and our expectations. I think it's one of the things when you look at a baby. And one of the things parents often feel is, can I do a better job than my parents? Many men will ask, why am I so much like my father? Or why am I struggling with this? Can I have a good relationship with my son or play football? You mentioned this idea that men have to be able to play football with their sons. The number of sons who can't play football and feel they've let down their dads seems to be a major kind of class of therapy client. The number of lads who love to cook with their dads, and you know, it's really great in families where there are sons and daughters together to be able to not reinforce the roles. And the number of male students I see who've got kind of new mums who actually rejoice that they are, because they find it gives them a different language of relationship with women. And I think that kind of role has really been hugely important. I'm thinking of one of my dear brothers, when his daughter started dating his possessiveness of his daughter, he was overwhelmed with, because how can I be a good dad? How can I look after my daughter? How can I protect her? And actually his love for her was actually very difficult for him to negotiate. Because in many ways he was losing his daughter to another guy. And he knows, I mean, he's a medic. He knows this is biologically kind of the journey it goes on. He could do this knowledge, which I think often we have in this territory, but couldn't do the gut knowledge or the heart knowledge of it. And I think those different levels of how we know something is something we need to think about. Very interesting in some ideas is the men becoming a dad, the power of knowing that you're not firing blanks. And for many men, that's a really interesting thing. Their pride somehow of being a fertile male. And the problem for infertile males, because they do find that actually their sperm does not have a high sperm count on that. And I think that is another territory of men and male identity, which I wish some of the male colleges would do some thinking about. But what's it be to me, a man? There's a great film made a few years ago called Misrepresentation, about the roles and presenting of women. It's an American film, but it's actually about how women might mentor other women and how they might build this up. And it was a great film. It was really quite an important film. Interestingly, students are now watching it quite a lot in this. You know that kind of drift. It takes about 4 years for something from the States to come over here. But they've done an equivalent film for men called The Mask You Live In. And it's how men learn very early on to have masks, to be the man, to not to cry, to be a brave soldier if you fall over. And the impact of all of those. And I remember I used to box. This was when I could move fast. And I remember one of the things they train you when you're boxing. And as you're hitting to learn to box, they say, go on, be the man, be the man, be the man. And I was kind of going, can I just box? Do I have to? And it wasn't the place to have a kind of nuanced conversation about gender roles in the 21st century. But it was so tempting. I did find it very different. Last few things I just want to say quickly is some really stunning work I've seen recently about families and reproduction, and saying parents always need to remember they don't reproduce, they produce. Your child will fall far from the tree. It's not you. You have not reproduced anything. You have just produced something. And this guy who's done this wonderful study, and particularly looked at parents who have deaf children, how difficult they have to understand the deaf and the hearing in the hearing community. And I think it's a really lovely work. He's also worked in the field of depression, which I think is always interesting, what else people have worked in. It's like Rudolf Hess therapy, a therapist, a guy called Dix, became a marital therapist later. And I always think that's very interesting, because of all authoritarian personalities and how you would understand then marriage and the dynamics within marriage. Sorry, that was an aside. It's just that some of the Hess letters have recently been published with his therapist, so I think it's kind of quite interesting. But I think for many of us, we really do need to think about how different our children are, how we facilitate them to be who they are, and that might be a great way forward for fatherhood. But there's a stack of things we've not looked at, and I know we're running out of time. I want to think about missing fathers, the effect that has, missing fathers on both daughters and on sons. And it kind of plays out very similar. It's a bit like Venn diagrams, most of the world of therapy. There's kind of huge overlaps, and there may be bits of difference, which may not belong to gender. They may belong to other issues as well, class, education, culture, and kind of things like that. But I think Venn diagrams often works. I remember, and it's very funny now because this is the wrong example to give, but because my father died when I was 19, I always say, I never learned how to shave. And of course, now that's clearly obvious that I never learned how to shave, and clearly I've been growing my beard because I knew I was going to be here. But the effect on boys who don't have dads to teach them to do things like that, that kind of companion and that loss, what that might mean. Or when I go to the doctors now, my mother died soon after my father died, so my childhood wasn't always completely straightforward. She died about 7 years later. I'll go to the doctor, and they'll automatically assume, so your parents, tell me about your parents' eyes, or their health, or things. No idea, and I didn't have grandparents. So you land up, it's very obvious why I became a therapist, isn't it? But you land up being asked about things, and if you don't know who they are, a friend of mine who's adopted, they automatically assume he will know what his family is. That's not that. We've got very limited models of family when we discuss families and things. I would love us to pull that out just a little bit further. And I think I want to kind of stop there, except for some work I've been doing recently on children who are adopted, who've been tracing their family. And what I find intriguing is the ones I've seen, which is just groups of just many who've come to see me who've answered to this request for this, they've gone in search of their mothers first. And it seems to be that they've often needed to have a secure base with mother to dare find out who perhaps the mirror image, who the father is. And for many of them, it's taken many more years to find father. And I'm not sure what that says about fatherhood, but I'm sure it says something. Thank you very much.